Hey, welcome to the Double Drop Kick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And today, we're going to talk about one of the most significant pay-per-views in wrestling history. That's right. It's coming up in just a few weeks, the Survivor Series. All right, Mark, the year is 1987. Uh-huh. Up to this point, pay-per-view is a very small part of the wrestling business. Uh-huh. Starcade for 84, 85, and 86 has been entrenched on Thanksgiving night from the Greensboro Coliseum and the Atlanta Omni. It's etched in stone. Thanksgiving mm-hmm. night is Starcade.
That's right.
Then 1987 rolls around and Vince McMahon gets into the picture.
Yes, he does. And he goes to the cable companies based off the success of the previous year's WrestleMania and says, if you carry Starcade from Crockett Promotions, we're going to be doing a rival show that night mm-hmm. called the Survivor Series. And if you choose to carry Starcade, then you don't get to carry WrestleMania.
Yes.
And all but, I just read this figure the other day. It was 40 or 50 cable companies in the country carried Starcade.
Right.
And it not only was it not a great Starcade.
Right.
But nobody carried it. And it really hurt Crockett Promotions.
On top of that, and I think we've talked about this before, Crockett moved that show to Chicago. It was out of its home territory.
That was the problem. Plus, not only did he move it to Chicago, but they used a dusty finish in the Road Warriors versus Tully and Arn match.
Yeah.
And Chicago was the billed hometown of the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
Everything had led up to the Road Warriors winning the title. And then they win the title only to have the decision reversed in their hometown of Chicago.
Yeah.
And I say hometown in air quotes.
But, yeah.
You talk about killing a town.
Yeah.
That hurt. That hurt. And not only did it hurt because of that, the fans in Greensboro were insulted that they had moved out of the Greensboro Coliseum because it had been there every year.
Right, right. Now, Vince McMahon, this is the second pay-per-view. The second themed pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was. They had done, of course, WrestleMania, and I think they had done the big event. I know was their actual first foray into pay-per-views to kind of trial run for WrestleMania.
Right, right.
It seems like there was one other one, but I don't know.
But SummerSlam was going to start in 88. But in 87, the build to this.
Uh-huh.
Thanksgiving night, the Survivor Series, teams of five strive to survive. It was a totally unique concept.
Uh-huh.
That on paper and in theory looked so intriguing.
Right.
That you take your four main feuds,
uh-huh.
build teams off of that, and then the lesser feuds, you put those guys on opposing teams.
Right. That's great in theory.
Great in theory. How did it come off, Mark?
Well, how did it come off then? I remember liking the idea and getting the VHS and watching it and enjoying it. I went back and watched them a few months ago, and I started with 87 and watched all the way up through 93. Not all in one day, just
when I knew
we were going to do this show, when I sat down to watch wrestling, that's what I chose to watch. And it was just not great.
Right,
Just probably... I can remember thinking, I can't believe they're abandoning the classic Survivor Series format. And then you go back and watch them and you kind of understand why they did.
Right.
It wouldn't work today because there's only one or two main storylines.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody doesn't have an angle in a storyline.
And they've already announced for this year the...
Team Cena versus Team Authority.
And there's teasing who's going to be on the team. Yeah. And I like that.
At the time of recording this, I feel like Dolph Ziggler is going to be on Team Cena.
Yes. Yes.
Based on, because this just happened Monday night.
Right.
So you may be hearing this a few weeks later, but it looks like Ziggler's going to be on Team Cena.
Our goal is for this show to be out before Survivor Series.
I'd like to just get it recorded before Survivor Series.
I just want to read to you. Now, the typical pay-per-view nowadays, 6, 7, 8 matches. So the first Survivor Series, 1987, 4 matches. And to give you an idea, I want to go through. We won't do this for all of them for sure. But for this one, I want to read the teams, if that's okay with you, Mr. Whitman.
I don't care.
So the first match, you had the team of Randy Savage, Jake the Snake, Ricky Steamboat, Brutus Beefcake, and Jim Duggan.
Very unique.
Right.
Team, because of the Savage Steamboat feud, the Savage Roberts feud, the Roberts Steamboat feud. So all those guys had or would have big classic feuds with one another, but this night they're on the same team.
Yeah. And they're going against part of the Heenan family and Jimmy Hart's crew, Honky Tonk Man, Hercules, Danny Davis, Ron Bass, and Harley Race.
Mm-hmm.
Harley Race, 4 years removed from Starrcade 83, this between me and you and millions of people listening. You think Harley Race is going to this match looking around and being like, what the crap?
Harley Race is smart enough now to say that the King gimmick was an honor.
Yes.
Just like Dusty Rhodes is smart enough to say the polka dot thing didn't bother him.
Yes.
But the King gimmick was to make fun of Harley Race.
Right.
That was the intention when they gave him that gimmick. It was to make fun of Harley Race. He is smart enough, like I said, to treat it as though it was an honor for them to call him the King. But
That match went 24 minutes. I'm trying to find my notes here and see who...
I don't rely too much on them notes. You get all sidetracked when you do and you don't talk. So don't worry about them notes.
So, all right. Randy Savage, the good guys win. The second match, I'm not going to read out the card. It was a 5-on-5 women's match.
Which, if you've ever seen the match, the Jumping Bomb Angels, correct? Is this the match?
Yeah.
Okay. Just showed how bad the women's division was.
Right.
Because they just, I mean, every time the Jumping Bomb Angels went in the ring, the other girls couldn't keep up with them.
No.
It was sad.
Enough said about that. Now, this next match, 10 tag teams.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite team.
That was a unique match.
Yeah, your favorite team, Strike Force.
Yeah,
the
my
young
favorite
stallions
team.
Of Paul Roma and Jim Powers, the Rougeos, the Killer Bees, and the British Bulldogs faced the Hart Foundation, the Islanders, which is Haku and Tama, Demolition, the Bolsheviks, the Dream Team, which at that time was Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo. And there were five managers at ringside.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that match.
This match went 37 minutes.
And that was a thing they did the first few years. They'd have a tag team match where it would actually be 5-on-5 teams.
And if you go back just and fast forward to this match, there's not an empty spot on the ring.
No. And it's a good match.
It's a spectacle.
Yeah, it's a pretty good match.
It's a spectacle. And Strike, again, the good guys go over. The main event, the main feud at that time, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you will. At this time, Savage is champion, correct? This is after WrestleMania 4?
No, I think this is after WrestleMania 3.
Okay.
And I may be wrong, because I don't remember every little date on everything.
Right. Anyway,
this was leading into WrestleMania 4. Maybe.
The main feud is, I think you're right.
It couldn't have been because Hogan and Savage were on the would have been on the same team because the Mega Powers would have already formed.
I'm looking at the.
This is what happens when we try to use too many notes.
Sorry, I apologize. I'm looking at the poster. Hogan's the champion,
right?
At this point. But the main feud is Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. So you have a team of Andre the Giant, One Man Gang, King Kong Bundy, Butch Reed, and Rick Rude. Talk about a five-star posse there. They're going against Hulk Hogan, Paul Orndorff, Don Morocco, Ken Patera, and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Who puts on a clinic, man. Bam Bam performed very, very well in that match.
Yeah, so I want to ask you this, okay? Hulk Hogan's team does win. Hogan, I think, is eliminated fairly. He's eliminated. Yeah, Bam Bam Bigelow mm-hmm. is the survivor. Typically, in some of those moments, last year at Survivor Series, Roman Reigns did well, mm-hmm. and that led to somewhat of a push where he did great in the Royal Rumble. That didn't really happen with Bam Bam Bigelow.
It was intended to.
Right. I know he eventually, you know, main evented WrestleMania with Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, but I mean, that was what it was. Bam Bam liked to joke around. He was the highest paid job guy in the business. You know. Because of that match.
But they have typically used, and for the first several years, it was strictly Survivor Series elimination matches.
Yes.
When you hear the term traditional Survivor Series match, that's what they're talking about. Whether it's three men on a team, four men on a team, or five men on a team, it's an elimination match. Mm-hmm. And they have used that to showcase different talents. There was one year Ultimate Warrior was the final survivor. I don't think he was in the ring more than 2 minutes of the match. And I really, really think they kind of did that to protect him because he was in there with some really good heel workers and he didn't do a whole lot.
That's my favorite traditional Survivor Series match is the match when and I've probably talked about it before, and I don't want to jump ahead.
No, you're fine.
But he had the team of the Warriors, which was the Ultimate Warrior, the Road Warriors, and the modern-day Warrior, Kerry Von Erich.
Right.
And they fought the Perfect Team.
Yeah.
Which was Mr. Perfect and Smash, Axe, and Crush of Demolition.
Right.
And that's probably my favorite traditional Survivor Series match of all time, just because at the time I was a big Ultimate Warrior fan, huge Road Warriors fan, and a big Kerry Von Erich fan.
Yeah.
So for all of it, and it was logical, it made sense.
The teams.
No, they didn't call him the modern day Warrior in WWF, but anybody who had followed him knew that that had been his moniker before he got there, was the modern day Warrior.
Right.
He was a Texas Tornado there, but I love that match.
Yeah, that's a great match. Now, over the years, the Survivor Series has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I even say there's been a few years where there were no traditional Survivor Series matches.
Yeah, there probably were. I can't remember any, but I know there were a few years when they didn't have any.
There was one year.
Well, there was the year they had the tournament.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to speak on that.
Yeah. But again, it still played into the Survivor Series name.
Right. And I'll go ahead and tell you. There's not going to be a cohesive timeline in this episode. We're going to be jumping around talking about different years. The tournament you just spoke of was 1998. That show ended. The two things I remember about that show, I got so tired of hearing The Rock's music. I think he wrestled four times that night. And every time, it just boom, 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 boom.
Can I just... I know we've kind of mentioned this, a new segment.
Yeah.
Martell It Like It Is. Based on you ranting on me about Rick Martell, I am just not enamored with The Rock.
Right.
Like a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I like him. Now, don't get me wrong. And I love his movies. I love The Rock as an actor, as an action star, because he looks like... But as far as like the whole The Rock series and that song, it just never has appealed to me like it did to a lot of other people.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah. Then 98, though, The Rock turns heel, becomes a member of the corporation, becomes the corporate champion. But they did the screwy finish where he puts Mankind in the sharpshooter and Hebner calls for the quick bell.
Wonder why they did that.
Well, that was playing off.
Well, was there a reason that they would have... Yeah. So let's have done something like that at 98. Maybe did something happen in 97.
Let's talk about what happened.
Let's not.
I don't want to talk about that match. I don't want to talk about the ending of the match.
Oh, okay. All right.
I want to talk about that match.
Oh, yeah.
Because we mentioned it. It might have been in my shoot interview because I was bashing on Bret Hart.
Yeah. I'm still a little mad about that.
Okay, that's all right. You just got me back talking about The Rock. People remember the Survivor Series 97 for the screw job Bret Hart leaves. What people forget is that entire match leading up to the finish.
Not only the entire match, the entire card.
Yeah.
And the entire few weeks leading up to the card.
Yeah.
Where you were told, these two guys really don't like each other.
Right.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I remember Jim Ross saying in his commentary an hour or two before the match happens, it's going to be stiff and it's going to be real. They were selling it as though you might actually see a real fight break out.
Yeah.
Between the two of these guys. To their credit, Every time I watch them get in the ring, you hear about all this bad blood that exists between the two of them and how much they hated each other in real life. And they got into a real fight in the dressing room.
Yes.
But as soon as that bell rang, you never see two more professional guys right. with one another in the ring.
And you're talking about one of those guys who has a well-chronicled drug issue.
Uh-huh.
So probably not.
Not Bret Hart.
No. Shawn Michaels, well-chronicled drug issue. But that match in 97, would I be overstepping my bounds, Mark, to say it could be on the poster for Snot Bubble Saturday?
Oh, it's a great, great match. Yes.
I mean, it is. We've said it before, that match takes a downturn when they get in the ring fight.
Yeah. Right.
They brawl through you're hooked.
Yeah.
As soon as that match starts and they're brawling through the crowd, you're hooked.
Crowd was hot. They hated Shawn Michaels. They loved Bret Hart.
It's in Canada, of course, if Montreal can be considered part of Canada. Now, a couple of things, and sorry to bring up what I found interesting, because I'm watching this match in hindsight.
Uh-huh.
And now that you have mentioned the way it was billed, I understand every referee on the roster is ringside. Jerry Briscoe is ringside. Pat Patterson actually gets physically involved. Shawn Michaels just punches him. He just stands there. Shawn Michaels punches him.
Yeah.
Vincent Mann's ringside.
Sergeant Slaughter's
ringside. I mean, it is billed, and it is like, you know, this is something unique is going on here.
Right.
So I have gone back and forth in my mind. We've talked about the Montreal Theory DVD. We've talked about, is this the greatest work in the history? And I'm still on the fence about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because do they bring all those people out there to make it appear that anything that happened? Or did they bring all those people out there thinking, you know, Bret Hart, it may take all of us to stop him. Once this finish got down.
That was a legitimate concern.
Yes.
That Bret Hart, and I don't think they had a little scuffle in the dressing room.
Yes.
But it was basically just that, a little pull apart. Hart and Michaels had a little pull apart in the dressing room a few months prior to that.
Yeah.
And Bret Hart apparently pulled a chunk of Shawn Michaels' hair out of his head. That's the story, and that Michaels walked into Vince McMahon's office with holding his own hair in his hand and telling him he quit because he couldn't work.
Yeah.
Because he knew if they're in a... And I've always...
Yeah.
I don't like Shawn Michaels.
Right.
The person.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Let me rephrase that. I don't know Shawn Hickenbottom or Michael Hickenbottom. I don't know him.
Yeah.
Just everything I've heard about him, I don't think I would like the guy.
Right.
But bell to bell, he's one of my favorites to watch.
Yes, of all time. The way he did business back.
Right. Stage. I don't care for just stories I've heard about the way he's treated people and stuff like that. I don't think I would have liked the guy. And he wasn't no tough guy by no stretch of the imagination. No. And if Bret Hart had wanted to shoot on him, there wasn't anything he was going to do about it.
That's exactly right.
And I think it was done to create the illusion that, you know, if Bret Hart decides to snap, we got to have some people here. And they had told Shawn Michaels, Jerry Briscoe showed him a couple of holds.
Yeah.
That he could just at least grab a hold of Bret so he can't, you know, he can't hurt you.
But they rush Shawn, as soon as it's over, they get Shawn out of there.
Right.
And the rest of the Hart Foundation, because I think the alleged agreed upon finish was that everybody was just going to rush in and have a big old double disqualification kind of deal, and that kind of finish. And so the Hart Foundation comes out, and you know, you got Davey Boy Smith, you got Owen Hart. Who else was in the Hart Foundation at that time? Pillman?
Yeah, I think Pillman was still alive.
What about Neidhart? Is Neidhart in the picture? Yeah. I mean, so you got some pretty legitimate.
Yeah, Pillman probably wasn't there though.
Tough guys, but I think when people think about
Pillman had passed by that point. I'm sorry, he had passed away.
When people think about the Survivor Series, right or wrong, that's the moment people go back to.
That's true. And I'm tired. Yeah, they do, and I hate that.
Yeah, because there's been that leads me into my next point I want to talk about, because there have been some other tremendous,
well, you know,
Survivor Series moments.
92. Mm-hmm. Survivor Series 92. 5 years before that, Bret Hart won his first title from Ric Flair in a non-televised match.
Right.
And his first opponent, his first pay-per-view as champion, was Survivor Series 92, and his first opponent was Shawn Michaels. Mm. And they had a really good match.
Yeah.
And then I just watched it last night. Survivor Series 96.
Yeah.
Which is, if I were going to say watch a good Survivor Series, that's a good one.
Right.
And I'll just talk about everything on it right now instead of jumping around. Everybody like knows that I was a big Steve Austin fan. And Steve Austin, before he got hurt, was considered one of the best technical wrestlers.
Yes.
In the wrestling business.
Yeah.
That's why they gave him the ringmaster gimmick. And Bret Hart is widely considered to be one of the best technical wrestlers of all time. So I'm a huge fan of both of those guys. I was a huge fan of both of those guys. And after Bret Hart lost the title to Shawn Michaels, he took a few months off and then decided when it was time to come back, he handpicks Steve Austin to be the guy he comes back against.
Yeah.
And at the time, that was a dream match for me.
Yeah.
And I was really excited about seeing that. And you all right over there?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Sure. I'm good.
All right, man. Just want to make sure.
No, I mean, I'm reading some stuff because you're talking about 96, so I want to talk about some other things that happened at the Survivor Series.
I'm going to talk about it. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay, so I can just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you can just pay attention to me.
Okay. Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll sit in my corner. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, man. We can
No, you go ahead.
Anyway, so there you go again.
I'm listening. I'm multitasking.
You ain't multitasking.
I am. I'm listening. Totally listening. All right. I'm just kidding.
Go ahead and do it. Nobody's gonna care about hearing this. This is just me mess with you. So anyway, they have this incredible match, man, that I watched last night, and it was a good match. What you got?
No, I was listening to what you were saying.
I know, but I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's not your fault. I lost my train of thought. Because I got to picking on you.
I'm sorry. It's my fault.
You worrying about them notes too much, man.
No. So you had the 96. That is a good Survivor Series. Some significant things that happened. Sid beats Shawn Michaels to win the title, which I find odd in the light of what we've talked about, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Did Shawn
hang on,
Michaels?
Hang on. Uh-huh. Sure enough, I want to go back a little bit because I want to talk about Steve Austin, Bret Hart. Man.
Okay, talk about yes.
Do you want to reset here, or you just want to leave this part in?
Let's leave this part in. People need to know we're human.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, nothing to be sorry.
We're
going to
reset this thing.
Okay.
It was 96.
96.
I was a huge fan of both guys. Both guys, great technical wrestlers. They go in the ring and they put on, they tell an incredible story that was probably not better than the WrestleMania match that they had, but equally as good in a different fashion because you hear people talk about pro wrestling philosophies and psychology and things like that. One that I prescribe to is that the first time two guys meet in a match, even if there's a little heat there to set it up,
right,
the first step in the match is not trading punches.
Right.
So these guys go out and put on a great technical wrestling match until it finally breaks down. And once it breaks down, they just stood in the middle of the ring and slugged it out with each other. And the crowd is going nuts.
Right.
Because they worked their way up.
Yeah.
To it breaking down.
Yeah.
They didn't start out brawling around outside the ring.
Right.
They didn't start out trading punches. They started out chain wrestling in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
And it built to a crescendo where they started brawling. And the crowd was hot for it. And this was at the beginning. He had already cut the Austin 316 promo. And this was the beginning of the crowd starting to cheer him on.
Mm.
And you can hear it in the course of this match with people kind of giving him a good reception, an appreciative reception, but not being really into him. And by the time the match was over with, they were chanting Austin, Austin, yeah. Austin. And it says a lot about him and a lot about Bret Hart. And that match probably is what he was already on his way, but by Bret Hart, because Bret Hart was the main event guy.
Right.
And when he says, I want to have a match with Austin, and then they go out and not just have a match, they have the match of the night.
Yeah.
And they tear the house down.
Yeah.
It made Steve Austin.
Yes.
And he's always said that Bret Hart is the guy who gave him the hand up.
Kent, let me ask you, this is before Austin's injury. Do you I think, obviously, the neck injury, the multiple neck injuries cut his career short. What kind of, do you think we would have got the same Stone Cold? You just mentioned
Bret Hart's
one of the greatest technical wrestlers ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin
was
hung with him.
Considered to be one at the time.
I think that would have been an interesting career to see.
If he had really been healthy. Because he changed his wrestling style altogether.
Yes.
He became more of a brawler, and he relied on that brawling style. And, but that's what took him to the dance, too.
Yes, absolutely.
But, I think if he'd have been able to have some really good wrestling matches, it probably would have enhanced and made things a little bit better. But
As I'm looking here, I'm looking over that whole card. Survivor Series has been a place where many guys have made their debuts.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky Maivia, that same card, makes his debut, is the sole survivor in his match. I did not realize that on his team that night, Barry Windham.
Uh-huh.
You said you just watched that card. What was Barry Windham? Did he have a gimmick?
He was a stalker.
And he was on the good guy team, or are they the bad guys?
Yeah, he was him and Mark Marrow.
He was a stalker and a good guy. That's not logical.
Well, he wasn't a stalker in that he likes a woman and won't leave her alone.
Oh.
He was a hunter.
Okay. Let me throw out some names here. Flash Funk, Jimmy Snuka, Yokozuna, and Savio Vega.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good talents. Against Vader,
uh-huh.
Farouk. And then New Diesel and New Razor Ramon.
Uh-huh.
Two of the worst, just bad ideas.
Yeah, not good ideas.
Not good ideas.
Yeah, I fast-forwarded through that match.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about debuts. Rocky Maivia debuts it.
Yeah, but that's...
Well...
He debuted at that, and then, it was clear he was a blue chipper. He had the look. He had some ability, but it was not... Nobody bought that Rocky Maivia. It was awful. He knows it was awful. They know it was. He didn't get good till he became a militant member of the Nation of Domination and started referring to himself in the third person.
Right. Kurt Angle made his debut at the Survivor Series. I don't remember the year off the top
of
my head.
If we're going to talk about Survivor Series debut, there's only one.
Yes, and I'm leading up to that.
Okay.
And that is who?
The Undertaker.
The Undertaker.
Join up. Didn't he give Dusty Rhodes a tombstone?
I know he beat Dusty.
He was against Dusty Rhodes' team, and he beat Dusty Rhodes.
And then, just a few years later, wins the title from Hulk Hogan at the Survivor Series.
The one the following year. And then at 96, he and Mankind had a great wrestling match, which was they had casket matches, buried alive matches, boiler room brawls. They'd go on have Hell in a Cell. They had all these gimmick matches. But in this match, they just wrestled.
Hmm.
And they stayed in the ring. And it was a great wrestling match. And, Undertaker used a drop toe hold in the match. It's a really, really good wrestling match. That I guess it was to prove that they could work.
That's pretty awesome. You know, well, you said 96 was one to watch, and
yeah, I would if I was saying watch one, 96 would be pretty high on my list of Survivor Series to go back and watch.
The year he beats Hogan for the belt, Flair comes out.
Uh-huh.
Flair has entered. This is before the Royal Rumble where Flair wins the belt. Flair puts the chair down, Tombstone to Hogan. I believe it was just 2 days later.
Yeah.
The Texas
Tuesday in Texas.
Hogan regains the belt. But as I was watching that match, a couple of things. And this kind of showed the decline of Hulk Hogan.
Uh-huh.
This was a championship match. It was in the middle of the card.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that.
Yeah, if you go back and watch a lot of those, you'll see there's a reason for that. It's to get Hogan out of the building.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that was very, very common at the time for Hogan to wrestle in the middle of the card. And actually,
even on the pay-per-views.
Yes, even on the pay-per-views. And it got Hogan out of, not at WrestleMania, but on the other pay-per-views. And it gave Hogan a chance to get on out of the building so he wouldn't get mobbed. And he could get, because he did a lot of personal appearances. And actually, they offered the same deal to Austin, and he told him no. He was the champion, which meant he was the main eventer, and he main event goes on last.
Oh.
And he wouldn't take the deal. They tried to get Austin to wrestle in the middle of the card, and he wouldn't do it.
Interesting.
He was the main event. He wanted everybody to know he was the main event.
But when I just remember that match felt odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd reaction, even when Hogan was hulking up, there was a little bit of a...
He was gone shortly after that.
Right.
There's a reason. It was just like, it gets passe, man.
Yeah, but I also felt that match, it may not have been what put Undertaker on the map, but man, this guy just beat, whether he cheated or not, this guy just beat Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And you could tell he wasn't just going to be a Johnny come late.
Right, yeah, yeah, he had some legs.
That he was going to be...
He was going to be around for a while. And he was.
Yeah. And
he's like the last guy left that was a product of the territories.
Yeah.
You know, he's the last gunslinger left in wrestling. Triple H will try to convince you that he is, but he's not.
Nah. Terrorizing. Yeah. That's what he is.
Yeah. Triple H is a product of one company telling you that somebody's great for years and years and years. And the people that didn't grow up watching him believe it.
Yes. Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. Where you're force fed some things.
Yeah.
And like, if you're told a lie.
DX is responsible for the Attitude Era, and Triple H is one of the greatest of all time. And, you know.
Neither
of those are true.
Right. Neither of those correct. We talked about great debuts. We talked a little bit about 97. Any other moments as you think about Survivor Series that you would kind of list as game-changing?
I don't know if it was game-changing, but one I like was when Flair and Razor Ramon had a team, and Randy Savage was looking for a co-captain for his team, and he asked Mr. Perfect.
Mr. Perfect
had been Ric Flair's advisor.
That's right.
And they were on the Tuesday night show, or that little talk show they had, and Bobby Heenan told Mr. Perfect he knew what side his bread was buttered on, and he wasn't going to do it. And he said, Ric Flair tells you what to do. Ric Flair pays you, so you're not going to team with Savage. And Mr. Perfect stood up and poured water over his head. Bobby Heenan slapped Mr. Perfect.
Told him
he needed to get wise to where his money was coming from and this and that and the other. And Mr. Perfect poured water over his head and told him nobody told Mr. Perfect what to do. He would team up with Randy Savage if that's what he wanted to do. And that kind of teased this, can they trust one another? And then, of course, they wind up teaming up together to take on Flair and Razor Ramon's teams. It wasn't a game changer. I just liked it.
No. That's a really, really cool.
Because I was a big Mr. Perfect fan.
Really cool angle. The Elimination Chamber, which we just found out they're eliminating that pay-per-view.
That's good.
But that match was introduced at Survivor Series in 2002. And I think that's a... What do you think of the Elimination Chamber as a match?
I never cared for it.
I haven't watched too many of them.
I've watched a couple of them. I mean, there's usually a couple of good spots, you know.
Yeah.
There was that one that I really liked that it looked like Santino was going to win. Mm. I really liked it because the crowd got into it and he just.
I do feel like it, if you're not going to have blood.
Yeah. You're just wasting your time.
Right. There's no.
Put the cage in the warehouse and leave it alone.
Yeah.
If you're not going to bleed.
Or bring back the big blue cage and just tell me we'll climb out.
Right. Exactly. Not we're locking it in to settle the score. WWE, let's put a cage around the ring so we can try to run from one another.
Let's talk about some not so good moments. Let's get one out of the way. The agreed upon worst moment in Survivor Series history would be what?
Oh, everybody talks about the gobbledygooker.
Gobbledygooker. Google it, because we're not going to talk about it anymore. Hector Guerrero in a chicken suit.
Right? Yeah, it was pretty bad.
And then they had built up to that for a while.
Yeah, it was, what's in this big egg? And then it was a gobbledygooker.
Do you think that perhaps we could have caught on it, what's in this big egg, to know this is going
to
be
this is not going to be good.
This is going to be a suck fest.
It's just that weird Vince McMahon sense of what he thinks people are going to care about.
Let's talk about 99 and 2000. Two matches in my notes, or two moments in my notes. Let's start with 99. Austin's supposed to be, I can't remember if it was in a team match or, Austin's supposed to be in a three-way match for the title.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most everybody knows he's hurt, legit.
Right.
He's advertised for the main event of a pay-per-view, and they run him over with a car.
Yeah, that was stupid.
I remember,
and it really wasn't stupid in the setup; it was stupid in the payoff.
Yes. You know,
the angle itself wasn't bad.
No.
Well done. It was just, where do you go? Somebody's got to be driving the car.
Yes,
and it was the payoff.
No, I can't remember who was driving.
Rikishi.
The car.
So you should.
You should remember
who was driving the car, and you don't. And that's the problem.
Because they were trying to. Because it made no sense. Because Rikishi
he did it for The Rock. To prove his loyalty for his family, and Triple H put him up to it. And it was just
so.
Yeah, it was there was no payoff for who was driving the car.
So 15 years later, that's still a bad idea. So let's go to Survivor Series 2000 again. Steve Austin, Triple H, title match. I believe it's a title match. He lifts him in a crane.
Yeah. They had become over-reliant on stunts like that.
Is there a name or a person you want to blame for this direction? I mean, I'll throw a name out there.
Who?
Is this a product of Vince Russo?
In 2000?
99 or 2000. When did he go to WCW? Was that two? I just want to blame stuff on
that. I know. You can't blame him for everything.
Anytime I see something in a car.
You can't blame anything on Vince Russo. Vince McMahon has the final say-so in WWE.
And in 99 and 2000, the final say-so at Survivor Series were, it was.
Yeah, that's not Vince Russo's fault. That's Vince McMahon.
Okay. So that leads me to another point, not in the notes.
Here's the thing about being the guy.
Right.
Throw blame on Vince Russo for stuff that happened in WCW, but you can't give him the blame for stuff that happened in WWE.
Right. Right.
Because he was not the guy making the final say. Vince McMahon was.
I remember in 99 and 2000 paying full price for those pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
They both had screwy finishes. I remember being disappointed, a little bit angry. The past pay-per-view, Hell in a Cell, people would say, had a screwy finish.
Uh-huh.
The reasoning given now is most people are only paying $9.99 a month for pay-per-views. So we're getting a little bit more of that because Night of Champions had didn't have a clean finish. To me, I'm okay with a finish that's not clean as long as it makes sense. I was okay with Bray Wyatt coming back. Totally unexpected. Some people didn't like the whole deal.
I didn't like the hologram. No, it was hokey.
I like the whole deal. And did you know they took a Bray Wyatt interview and played it backwards?
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, I got that.
Paul is dead. they were backmasking some Beatles songs. I'm okay with that if it's shocking. Not got run over by a car, shocking.
Here's my problem with it is the point of a cage match is that we're going to settle this thing. And every time they have a cage match, or especially a Hell in a Cell, which is supposed to keep everybody out and let them settle their score, somebody always winds up in the cage.
Yeah.
So why, there again, if you're not going to live up to your stipulation, why do it? And if you're not going to bleed, put the cage in the warehouse.
Yeah.
Because you're not, the whole stipulation of a cage match is to settle a score, and it never happens in WWE.
It's no Starrcade 86 cage match.
No. And it's fine if it happens every now and then. You know, when Kane came down during the Shawn Michaels Undertaker, it made sense. He ripped the door off.
Yes.
And got in the cage, and it hadn't been done.
Very
but now, almost every time they have a cage match, somebody winds up in the cage with them.
Yeah.
So why do it?
Yeah. And now, okay, you mentioned Survivor Series 96 as one to go and watch. Any other Survivor Series where you'd say, hey, if you got the network,
I watched 92. You know, it's to see the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, their match.
Right, that's a good match.
Man, I can't remember what year the one with the Road Warrior or the Warriors. It was 89 or 90. I don't, you know, I get fuzzy on dates when I'm trying to remember all of them, but those were good. Other than that, nah. There's not a lot of great pay-per-views out there. I can tell you, like, good matches. 96 would be the one I would recommend just off the top of my head, just to see the good Shawn Michaels Sid match, the Bret Hart Steve Austin, their first match.
Right.
Bret Hart's return.
Any
the
Survivor
Undertaker Mankind match, The Rock's debut.
Pretty historic.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Any Survivor Series you would throw out there to say, do not.
Unless you just like me and you like to watch things for historical significance, I wouldn't even consider watching the first few of them.
Right.
You know, unless you just, like, if you're like me and you care about that and you think it's important if I'm going to talk about it that I've watched them.
Right.
And I haven't watched every Survivor Series. But like, I watched the first one up through 93.
Yeah.
But that was 2 months ago. I thought we were going to do the show two months ago, and then we didn't, so I haven't gone back to watch them.
Right.
If you'd have asked me, if we'd have had this conversation when we were originally going to have this conversation, I could probably tell you a whole lot more.
Right. And that's when, in our defense, that's when the accident with my daughter happened. And
I'm not blaming. I don't mean it like we were going to do it and you screwed it up. That's not what I meant. I hope it didn't come, but we were going to do it.
The Oakway screw job.
That's right. We were going to do it, and then life happened.
Yeah.
And
we
love wrestling, but wrestling's not our life.
Yes.
And so we weren't able to do it, and I certainly wasn't going to go back and pour through all those hours.
No, because like you said, those first couple ones,
there were some long matches.
It's long matches, and it's
not great.
Like, I remember, I think it was, it wasn't the one with Ultimate Warrior you were talking about. It was one of the first ones. So it's like Ultimate Warrior and Sam Houston, and they're going against like Harley Race and Bad News Brown and Greg Valentine. And again, the Ultimate Warrior is the star of this match. He ends up being the lone survivor. But he's only in the match a few minutes. And so I say that to say, back then, I would have paid good money to rent a VHS. I would have paid good money for a pay-per-view. And then I get this match, and Sam Houston's in half the match. No offense to Sam Houston, who I'm Facebook friends with. But I paid to see Ultimate Warrior.
Right.
We came to see the Nature Boy. The same thing with that first year, Hulk Hogan. He's he's not the last guy standing.
Yeah, it's
the
Bam Bam Bigelow's match.
It's the Bam Bam Bigelow show. And that's the problem with these Survivor Series type matches.
Mm-hmm.
You're tuning in to see certain people. And when you have a traditional Survivor Series match, you're not guaranteed that your guy is going to get a lot of
FaceTime. Hogan's team had Coco Beware on it 1 year.
Yes.
And there was a lot of Coco Beware in that match. If you're buying a pay-per-view to watch Hulk Hogan, you don't really want to watch Coco Beware.
High energy!
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about a guy saddled with some gimmicks.
Hall of Famer, though. WWE Hall of Famer, Coco Beware.
Started out in world class. You know, that's all because he started out in world class. The PYTs.
Uh-huh.
Norvell Austin, who's not. And
who was a member of the original Midnight Express.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
That's why I'm the expert on the show. And you're
That's why I'm just asking.
And you're the guy who just asked me questions.
Let me share. We asked on our Facebook group, the wrestling you grew up with, we threw this question out. You know, what are some Survivor Series moments? Jason Hillenberg mentioned, obviously, his favorite moment was Montreal with Hart and HBK, that, you know, the effects of that were felt for years. Chris Strigel said, worst Survivor Series moment, agreed upon, gobbledygooker. Brian Huff, favorite Survivor Series match, same one that you said, Bret Hart, Steve Austin, 96. He also mentions Shane McMahon and Kane in an ambulance match. He liked that one. Stephen Anthony liked The Undertaker's debut. Other people mentioned the screw job as well. Danny Ngelmo, sorry if I'm messing up your name, he mentioned, and we haven't talked about this yet, in 1990, they did something different at the Survivor Series where they took all the survivors from the previous matches, and they did one match at the end. And if you go on Wikipedia, which I do a lot of times.
Boy, he's got a stack of notes over there.
If you go to Wikipedia, it just says heel team, face team.
Mm-hmm.
But Danny said that was one of his favorite memories, that was different. The bad was the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And obviously the ugly was the gobbledygooker. So if you want to see, even within the context of the uniqueness of Survivor Series, 1990, like I said, when they took all the winners and put them in a match at the end. And that was still the beginning of the Survivor Series. He was very much, these are the good guys.
Yeah.
And these are the bad guys.
Uh-huh. And the good guys will unite together on a team, and the bad guys have no problem working together on a
team.
That's
right.
I mean, you didn't see a lot of infighting. With the exception of when Mr. Fuji turned on Demolition and joined up with, had a double turn with
yes.
the Powers of Pain, who were on the babyface team.
Yeah.
Demolition was on the heel team, and they attacked Mr. Fuji for hitting him. He pulled the rope down. One of them, I forget, Axe or Smash, flipped out. They pushed Fuji down, and then the Powers of Pain come over and pick him up, and he goes to their corner, and in the process of the match, they become the heels.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty good angle, and yeah. I remember it. I didn't see that pay-per-view, but they played it on, whether it was Saturday Night's Main Event or whatever show, the highlight show or whatever, when they were talking. I can't remember the name of the WWF show.
Superstars.
I never got to watch that because I didn't have cable. Cause I lived on a farm.
All-Star Challenge, maybe?
Might have been.
All-Stars.
So, all right. So the only match we know for this year's Survivor Series is Team Cena versus Team Authority. Let me ask you this, Mark. We have both been very vocal critics
mm-hmm.
of the WWE
mm-hmm.
and the staleness of it.
Right.
What's something they could do within the confines of this traditional Survivor Series match that would make you take notice, that would make you say, oh, because I say that this past night's the Raw after Hell in a Cell, I thought was a good show.
Yeah, I did too.
From start to finish, I thought it had good pace.
They seem to be listening to people because I haven't seen that bunny. They've cut down on some of that comedy.
Yeah.
I noticed that Michael Cole's been a little bit more pointing out some loopholes and things instead of just joining in with the jackassery.
Yeah.
I've heard him a couple of times go, wait a minute, why would somebody do that? What's the motivation for that? And kind of questioning what some people's motivations were. I really think maybe they're paying attention because their ratings fell really low.
Right.
So they seem to be paying attention to what people are saying, and people don't want bad comedy. I hadn't seen Hornswoggle. I haven't seen that little bull.
No.
I hadn't seen Heath Slater.
No, the Slater Gator.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Maybe they've been on something, and I just save that for SmackDown. And do that stuff on SmackDown. And, you know, make Raw what it should be, the A show.
Yes, yes.
I don't like I'm not going to like anything The Miz does, but, you know, that stuff's still a little bit hokey.
Yeah.
But if the show's good, and I think that's I wouldn't even mind the wrestling bunny if the show was good. Because when the show's good, you can dismiss one or two bad segments.
Yes,
but when the
agree.
Entire show stinks,
yeah,
and you got Kathy Lee Gifford in a wrestling bunny and a guy dressed in an alligator suit and wrestling a bull, when the whole show sucks,
yeah,
and you put that on there, then that's what you walk away remembering.
Right. Right.
But, you know, if you see something really good happen on the show and it's four or five really good segments and 2 week segments, you can forget the week.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm telling you, you and I could lay out, we could lay out a good show, I think. Because one thing that I've liked or haven't liked is we just see the same guys wrestle each other.
That's my problem when I watched the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. I just thought, haven't all these guys wrestled like 10 times in the past month? What's new about this?
And that's the Survivor Series, traditional Survivor Series matches, gave you an opportunity to see guys team together you never seen team before, some unusual alliances sometime. And I think from what I've seen, they're going to use this year's Survivor Series match. I think there's going to be some turns. I think they're going to try to make a big splash with this.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to figure out who the authority team is going to be. I assume it's Rollins and Kane.
Right.
And I don't know.
Who knows what Orton's going to do.
I feel like Orton's probably going to wind up teaming with Cena.
Have they said if it's going to be 5-on-5 or 4-on-4? I don't think they mentioned that.
I don't know
that.
If they said.
What's your preference for number of people on a Survivor Series?
Probably 4-on-4, because if they do 5-on-5, they're really going to be stretching.
Right.
You know what I mean?
To me, 3-on-3 is just a 6-man match.
Yeah.
5-on-5 is a little too much.
Yeah. 4-on-4 is pretty good. It wouldn't surprise me if they don't go out and recruit for the authority a Rusev or a Mark Henry, who has now turned heel. Big Show's got motivation to join Cena. And, you know, Mark Henry, and they got a feud, so it wouldn't surprise me maybe to see that. And I think Orton will eventually side with Cena.
Is there any chance we see a debut in Survivor Series?
Somebody you know, it before? Could be, but who?
Yeah. Could, would it be?
Who's going to make a splash?
Did you hear? We've been wondering about this. Stephen King. Kevin Owens is going to be his ring.
Kevin
name.
Owens.
His son is named after Owen Hart. And so Kevin Owens is...
Sounds like they're letting these guys have a hand in picking their name.
I like that. I like that.
That's important. It really is. You know, that's if you just accept whatever, they'll give it to you.
Like Rocky Maivia.
Michael McGillicuddy. If you just accept Michael McGillicuddy or Husky Harris, they'll give it to you. They want people to say, nah, I don't like that. Let's go with this.
Yeah.
So Kevin Owens, that's going to be his name. Huh?
Yeah.
I don't know why he wasn't just Kevin Steen, but that's, you know.
Because that's his real name, right? Yeah. What's his real name?
I assume that it's Kevin Steen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it that much.
I was really surprised that Dynamite Kid was not his real name.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're a kid, you're thinking, who named
their kid Dynamite? Yeah.
Why? You know.
Dynamite Kid. Wonder what his last name is. Why am I Ronald Mark and he gets to be Dynamite Kid? My life would be a whole lot different.
I ain't even going to mention my first name.
It's Claude. Right? Oh. I'll mention it. Claude Heath. I don't even know how I know that.
I don't think it's a big secret. It was not a big secret among my friends. But there you go. So here's what we want you to do. We need you to download this episode. We need you to leave us a rating and a review. Go to doubledropkick.com. Click on the banner. Click on the banner. I cannot say that strenuously enough. Join the conversation. We've been talking about the Survivor Series. We know what we think correctly about the Survivor Series. We want to know what you think about the Survivor Series. So hit us up on Twitter at
The DDK Show
and at Heath Mulliken. Join the Facebook group, The Wrestling You Grew Up With. Go on our page, The Double Drop Kick Show. Tell a friend about us. You know, share that page. And people, pull the Jim Duggan. What can they do, Mark? Hit that what? Hit the like button.
Or give us thumbs up.
Give us the thumbs up. We're over 2,000 likes. Getting close to 5,000 downloads. It's all because of you fans. Actually, no, it's because of Mark. But you fans have something to do with it. Hey, we love doing this show. We're looking forward to Survivor Series. If you got the network, go back. One Monday night when Raw's not any good, get on the network. Watch that 96 Survivor Series. I'm going to. You should too. So as always, for the Double Drop Kick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.